Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Hi, Diana Frike here. I'm the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with the powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. This episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo. Retail Voodoo is a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Key, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design services for leading brands in the food, wellness, beverage, and fitness industry. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call and let's talk. You can find out more at retail-voodoo.com. Today, we get to meet Sophia Maroon, who is CEO of Dress It Up Dressing. A filmmaker by trade and a professional career interrupted by child rearing, it was in the middle of a messy life that Sophia created a craveable luxury in a sexy little package. Dress It Up Dressing has not only won awards and accolades from retailers and renowned chefs, it is also proudly part of the B Corp family, insistent on making a change for the better in business. Well, hello, Sophia. How are you today?
I'm fine, Diana. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And now, where are you? You're in Maryland, correct?
Just outside of Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. And rainy today, right?
Rainy. Rainy and a little miserable, but the end of April.
We switched here in Seattle. It's a gorgeous spring day, so we'll just switch for the day. Sorry about that.
Not there yet. Yeah, it's all right. Okay, right. I'll pretend I'm in Seattle. This is almost an in-person interview.
Now, before we start, I just want to say what a beautiful and romantic writer you are. Just to let everybody know, I always ask for people to send over their bios, and a lot of the bios are what you would expect from most professionals. And Sophia's bio is this really lovely lyrical expression of her life story of bringing a brand to life from kind of start to now. And I wish I could read it to you all now. I might, with her permission, post it somewhere, but it's so great. So I just want to say, what a lovely writer you are. If that's not your writing, just own it anyways. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, first off, I always like it when brands or when people tell us about their brands, why they exist. So tell us a little bit about Dress It Up Dressing. What is it? What is it? Why does it exist?
So Dress It Up Dressing exists. I didn't bring it into creation. It was my mother that brought it into creation. For my childhood, every single night, a salad was served with dinner, and she made a really simple red wine vinaigrette that was just olive oil, vinegar, mustard, and garlic. Mm-hmm. And she started making her own dressing because my father had been told he was pre-diabetic, and she couldn't find any salad dressing on the market that didn't have sugar.
Uh-huh.
So she insists that she got the recipe from her cousin Brigitte in France. But Brigitte said, no, I have my salad dressing and I got it from you. And so nobody really knows the origin of the salad dressing. I think I'm taking full credit for it now. But it was the brand Dress It Up was a natural evolution of that, because when I left for college, I took the recipe with me when I was living in my own home. Mm-hmm. I always made my own dressing. Mm-hmm. And then as I entered into motherhood, again and again and again, I have three children. Mm-hmm. I was still making my own dressing. And if they say, like, you know, great products come out of a need, this was my own need. I made salad dressing and I didn't want to be making it all the time. And so I couldn't find a salad dressing on the market that resembled homemade. And my brother kind of had the idea, okay, well, you know, so sell yours then. And I started Dress It Up by just giving it to friends Actually, it wasn't even called Dress It Up at that point. I was just giving salad dressing to friends to sort of say, yeah, you know, I do this. Like, I've got three children, but they're young and you have a little free time, not a lot, but just enough to either get bored or do something.
Yeah.
And so I just started making dressing for my friends and sharing it around the neighborhood. And one thing led to another, and somebody from Whole Foods tried it and they said, we don't sell anything like this. And if you can make this properly, at the time, you know, my 3-year-old was peeling the garlic printing labels off of my computer. Yeah. But they said, if you can make it properly, then we'll put it on our shelves.
I love it.
And so I had a bunch of friends over for dinner and had a big, big boozy dinner and said, I'm thinking of starting this salad dressing company. Whole Foods will bring it in. Like, what do I call it? Mm-hmm. And my friend Jim said, you should call it Dress It Up. And I don't, with that kind of support, Dress It Up was born.
Oh my goodness. Well, talk a little bit about, in this bio that I'm referencing from earlier, you talk about kind of the messiness of life. And I'm curious how that messiness may have helped with the influence, it may have helped influence the genesis of this. Is it just that you were a busy mom, or is there kind of a way of thinking or a way of life around that? Can you expand?
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, my life was messy. Yes. I mean, especially at that point, I had 3 young children. Mm. They were all under the age of 10.
Oh my goodness.
And you feel as a mom in that point, like you're part short order chef, but nobody likes the same food. So you're always throwing, you know, whoever likes what in front of them. Mm-hmm. And I felt like if I put a salad in front of them too, salad dressing and a packet of carrots. Like if I was feeding them tater tots and fish fingers for the night, if they had that, then at least, like, you know, I was ratcheting it up a little bit as mother. Yeah. It was slightly healthy. And for my own salads, like this salad dressing that my mother made, honestly, I didn't need any other salad dressing for mm-hmm. 20 years. It was mm-hmm. so good. And mm-hmm. it just made everything taste magnificent. Even if you were having like iceberg lettuce with, you know, spring onions. Right. It was incredible.
Right.
And so I felt like it could transform even the sort of most drudgy, like pull it together while the kids are fighting mm-hmm. Meal, that you had this instant yes. transformation.
Yes.
And I often liken it to Cinderella, like, you know, her fairy godmother comes and bing, you put a little Dress It Up on your salad, like on your lettuce. And it doesn't matter what the rest of your dinner is, like yep. something there is mm-hmm. delectable and amazing. Mm. And so that was where it's like, out of this messiness, can't we all grasp like a tiny moment of glamour?
Yeah.
Is there something we can do so that when you're sitting there and you're in your yoga pants and you haven't showered yet today, whatever yes. it is, it's like, can you do a little something for yourself to just bring yes. a touch of indulgence into your day? And that's what that represented to me every night.
Yeah. I don't know if folks can see in this, those of you that are on YouTube.
I've got one too.
Yes. There you go. I did try the champagne one. Thank you. I did try the champagne one on just plain spinach. And it was enough. Like I could just have a pile of spinach with a little bit of that dressing. You're not kidding. A little bit goes a long way. Really. I love the transformation of the creative on there. And I think it really matches the story. All parts of it are just so just beautiful expression.
Thank you.
Yeah. So you're going on year number 10 now, right? This is the 10th year anniversary.
Yep, it is.
Ooh, that's a big number in an entrepreneurial brand. How's that feel?
So it really does feel like a milestone. I didn't yeah. think it was going to be that significant, but it is significant. And I will also divide it up into two phases, because sure. when I first started Dress It Up, like I said, my kids were 3, 6, and 9 by the time, like, they were young and my youngest was in school 3 days a week for mm-hmm. 2.5 hours a day. Like I had my hands full and I would go and drive, I would make a delivery at Whole Foods. So mm-hmm. we got into one Whole Foods in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I think they finally got, like, once you do all the paperwork, we finally got on the shelf November. It was wow. election day.
Wow.
I remember.
Wow.
So we got in 2012, and that was November. By December, we were in 3 stores. And then by March, we were in 14. Mm. And so I was driving around with the 2-year-old in the back of the car and like making these deliveries, you know, arriving with my cases, and they'd buy like 4 cases at a time, you know, on a good day.
Sure.
But I was raising my family and sort of learning the ropes about how to build a food company simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really until 2018 that mm-hmm. I would say like the kids were now in school full time mm-hmm. and slightly more independent. Like mm-hmm. I'm also a single mom, right? So it was,
I see. And
I had, the kids were with me all the time.
Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to raise both my babies, my 3 live babies and my salad dressing baby simultaneously. And I'm sure I could have done a better job at both if, mm-hmm. you know, the other hadn't been in existence, but I was trying to do them side by side.
Yeah.
And at 2018, I felt like, okay, you know, now I can turn much more attention to the salad dressing. And so that was when we made a lot of big changes. We went from, initially we were selling 4 products. We expanded the line to 7. Mm-hmm. We went from these little pots of dressing because it's thick and creamy and the idea is that you would spoon it on.
I see.
And Whole Foods was like, no, you don't spoon salad dressing. Salad dressing comes in a bottle. Put it in a bottle. So we switched to a bottle. We lowered our prices. Mm-hmm. We expanded distribution. And so I'd say like, until 2018, it really was, mm-hmm. It's not a hobby. It was one above a hobby.
Understood.
But it was, and I also wasn't gonna, I was learning how to do things. So,
right.
So post 2018 though, we got serious and it helped that year we also won 2 awards.
Yes.
Sophie Award and we won a Good Food Award.
You did. Okay. That's a big deal.
I didn't realize what big a deal it was.
Sophie Award, for people who don't know about the Specialty Food Association and the fancy food shows like that, Sophie Award is a pretty big deal from that organization and from that group of people there. So more information on what do they go by?
SFA.
They do SFA by
Specialty Food Association.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's a big deal. Wow, congratulations.
Yeah. Well, and with that, we obviously got a lot of attention from retailers. And so that was a big, big year of growth. And one year after another, like it sort of moved from there that we've just been keeping up ever since, you know, trying to grow the brand in a way that is smart. So that we don't either get loved to death, expand too quickly. Scaling is a really, it's difficult and it's expensive. Mm-hmm. And so 2018 post has been just the next phase where it's scaling the company more than learning.
Gotcha. So was there like a moment or was there a conversation where you were like, oh, this was a good idea. I'm headed in the right direction.
Well, so as a consumer of my own product, I always thought it was a good idea. Uh-huh. I mean, I think like most salad dressing just doesn't resemble what you make it from scratch at all. It's usually made with inexpensive oils and it's filled. They say it's the least healthy part of your salad. And that's true. And we were making a product that was healthy, like just clean ingredients that you recognize and was no different from what you would make from scratch. Mm-hmm. And I really believed from day one that this was the best product on the market. Like for that reason, because my kitchen's filled with it. And
It better be.
Right, I know, but I think even if I weren't running the company, I'd be its best customer nonetheless. So I don't know that there was, maybe the support we got from retailers helped me really think that I was onto something good. I mean, when we were getting the attention of Whole Foods, right? And they're the ones telling us, we went and said, we've got 3 new ideas and like bring them all in, mm-hmm. But put them in a bottle, take them out of that little tub. And other retailers, like that response made me feel like we were on the right path.
Oh, awesome. Great. So, now looking back, and I like to ask this question just so that other people that are considering this journey or retailers. Yeah, retailers are pretty savvy about kind of the trials that entrepreneurial brands are going through, whatever the stage is. But I always like to ask, you know, it's like, was there a moment where you, where there was something went wrong? You know, there was a mistake that ended up being kind of like a really important part of your business. Like that mistake is the thing that may have been one of the things that helped you move into the right direction. And is that something that you can share?
Ooh, I mean, cause there are plenty of mistakes. Like and mistakes that then turned into like happy accidents.
Well, it could be even just the way you think about running a business or managing people or leading through change, any of those sorts of things.
I think, there's what I would say is that in the food industry, there are a lot of people that have expertise in the food industry.
Yeah.
And they are, and it's almost like they are so good at making food that they forget how to cook.
Oh, okay. Tell me more. What does that mean?
Well, it means that every time we've worked with three different co-packers in the time that we've been making this.
Yeah.
And obviously a co-packer is somebody who, so my dressing's really easy to make. It's because it's just a couple of ingredients and you stir it. It's literally like there's not cooking. It's so easy to make, but it's really hard to get into the bottle. To get it, like we make it creamy and emulsified. That's the one trick my mother taught me how to do. But it's hard, like, because we don't put any additives in it, it's hard to get it right every single time.
Sure.
And with the co-packers, I've been told, oh, well, you can add this ingredient and that's going to help
stabilize it. Or
you can add this ingredient and it's going to lower your price. Like we went into the market and we were easily the most expensive salad dressing on the shelf. There are a lot of reasons for that. We only use olive oil. We don't dilute it with water. We don't add sugar and gums and starches. Like every ingredient in there is delicious. And it's not the cheapest ingredient, but it's going to be the one that's healthiest for your body. If you eat olive oil and vinegar, it works well with your system. It's good for inflammation. It's good for your gut. Olive oil leaves you with a sense of fullness so that you don't need to keep on eating. Like you eat less if you eat real food. Mm-hmm. And our dressing is made exclusively from real foods.
Gotcha.
And I was told time and time again, you should try this oil. It's a lot less expensive. And it's like, no, I want olive oil. Like I just want olive oil. I don't want canola. I don't want safflower.
Yeah.
If you added gums and starches, you'd get the same product every single time. It's like, well, I'd rather teach my customer that there's going to be slight variation in here, but we're never going to add gums and starches. Mm. And again, you can lower price per ounce if you add some water. It's like, well, I'd rather teach my customer to use a little less and get all that flavor than to ship water around the country, because you don't put water in your salad dressing if you're making it from scratch. So why would you in the bottle? So the kind of being able as a startup brand and as somebody who'd never with no background in food to say to people, I'm not willing to do that, or I'm not going to do that, or let's try it this way.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens if we don't add the gums and starches. Like, let's try. Yeah. That was something where I had to fight sometimes more than others. And I was told you'll never go on the market with a salad dressing this expensive. Nobody will ever buy it if it's this expensive.
Yeah. I don't know.
If you tell people what they're spending money on, you know, usually people are okay with it if they know they're getting value for money.
As a brand strategist, I'm going to step over here into the other side of the world. We've worked with plenty of brands where we've developed brand positioning that allowed the brand to command the highest price point by a significant margin in their categories, because there's a value proposition that is so succinctly communicated. And I am frequently frustrated by experts out there who now they work in the world of more commoditized products, right? Things that don't have those pure ingredients. And so for them, it's all about volume. And if you're going to do volume, it's how cheap can you do it? And you know, how many units do I have to sell with a 1% margin instead of a 5%, or, you know, insert whatever your percentages are. And so I think what I love about what you're saying is, listen, I'm more committed to what this product is than I am about the profit. If this isn't going to fly the way I want it to go, if this concept isn't going to fly the way I want it to go, then it's not meant to be. And you stuck by your guns, you are showing that it's possible, right? So I'm so happy to hear that you're just like, no, this is the way it's going to go down, and find the right partners to work with you to make it come to a reality. So good for you.
Well, I do feel like, my name's on the bottle. It's like, it's on the side of my car. I can't sell something I don't believe in. I'm not a salesperson. I can't help but sort of tell you what I feel.
Go for it. Right.
I can't stop myself. And like, we had a ranch dressing that was not good.
Yeah.
And I couldn't sell it. Like, people would be like, oh, can I try the ranch? And I'm like, try that one instead. Yeah. Cause it wasn't good. And we took it off the market because I couldn't even pretend to say this was a good one.
Yeah.
And there are great ranches out there.
Yeah.
And so mine wasn't competing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sell a product I can't believe in.
Yeah. Absolutely. Totally get that. Great. Yeah. So do you have a particular milestone or moment that you are most proud of right now? I know it's just like, which one do you choose? But there might be one that just kind of the first one that pops to mind that you're like, that was an incredible moment or opportunity or human or whatever.
Yeah, I've got one big one, and it really doesn't have much to do with selling my product.
That's okay.
In fact, it's quite the opposite. But so 2020, yeah. February of 2020,
yeah.
We got a loan from Whole Foods to create individual serving sizes of our dressing.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm.
My beautiful little packets.
Oh, I love
and
it.
They were, like clean, healthy salad dressing on the go. And the idea is you put in your packed lunch, take it on the plane, take it camping, wherever you're going, pack a couple carrots and you've got a snack, you've got a meal, whatever you want. So we launched those February 1st of 2020. And they were on every salad bar in the Mid-Atlantic region of Whole Foods.
That's cool.
And they were doing like, this was going to be because we have an $8 salad dressing.
Yeah.
Like, let's let people try it for a dollar.
Try
it for a dollar.
Brilliant.
As soon as you try it, you're new addict.
Brilliant. That's what we do with snack products, is those single serves. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So that was the idea. And we, so they entered the market the first, and they were trickling into Whole Foods. Like, they don't all go in at once, but it got into the first one and then the second one. And we were selling, like, the numbers were so, like, when you pitch them to your investors or your team, and you're like, I think this is what we're going to be able to do.
Yeah.
We hit or exceeded every single number that I had projected, and, dance party in the office.
Yeah.
4 weeks later, 6 weeks later, 8th of March around here, they shut down the salad bars.
Yeah.
They shut down everything.
Yeah. Everything.
And we had 100,000. Well, we produced 100,000. We probably had 60, 80,000 of these in stock and lost all of our customers.
Yeah.
And we had, for a long time, we've supplied salad dressing to DC public schools because the mom and me says healthy eating starts early, and people eat their vegetables with a good dressing.
Yes.
So we would give them dressing either at cost or below cost because I figured I was making future customers. They started using our dressing and found that vegetable consumption was going up among these kids. Less was going into the trash can. So anyway, when the pandemic struck and we had all of this extra dressing, I called up DC public schools and said, what do you need? Because I knew that they were going to be serving just as many lunches with school closed since so many DC school students rely on their school lunches in order to get their nutrition. That parlayed into another partnership with my personal hero, Jose Andreas, and World Central Kitchen. And he had a program that he was running out of Nat Stadium here in DC, where they were feeding first responders, elderly, and children. And we partnered with them, and they used, I think, 10,000, they served 10,000 meals with our packets. DC public schools did about triple, quadruple that amount. And so that's part one. Like that to me was the milestone of my life was that partnership because he's such a hero of mine and he's local. He comes from my farmer's market where I first started selling the dressing. That was fantastic. Equally was when they called back a year later. I was like, okay, we want to work together again. And so I think that partnerships like that, like, you know, being able to not just like, yeah, we sell salad dressing, but also being able to use the salad dressing in order to just do the right thing, like achieve new milestones, do good thing, be a part of my community.
Yes.
That's the stuff that jazzes me as much as I don't know, just about anything else I do.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Jose is, as close to a saint as you can possibly, like the work that he does on a global level is pretty miraculous. It's
like, what a role model. Like why we should all think with that sense of community.
Yeah. What is my gift and how can I use it to help people?
Totally.
It's really that simple. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I agree completely.
And it's so like all of these things that you're talking about to me, it makes complete sense that you guys are a B corporation. I mean, just everything about what you do. And I've had plenty of B Corps on the show and we're a B Corp as well. And it's just, I love that relationship between business as a force for good is that is a complete demonstration of what you've done is not to wait, not even to wait for the ask is to step up and go, how can I help? Is pretty great, or pretty rad, as the kids say these days. Back to
I'm okay with being radically great.
Yeah, ooh, radically great. Ooh, I love that moniker. So I'm curious. You know, in the intro, I mentioned that you're a filmmaker, and we were talking about this beforehand. And I said, and you went to film school, and you go, actually, I didn't go to film school. So you went to school to do one thing. You became a filmmaker, and here you are, an entrepreneur of a dressing brand, and it's also a marinade and all those things. But this is not something that you eat by itself. It is a, what do they call that?
An ingredient.
Not an ingredient.
There's some word that I heard it described as, I heard somebody describe it like an ingredient product. I'm like, okay, you just took all the fun out of what
I do. Totally. Yeah, totally. It's a condiment, I believe.
It's a condiment.
There we go. That's the word we're going for. But in any case, I'm curious, how does your filmmaking background influence what you're doing now? Is there anything, the way you lead things or the way you see things? I mean, obviously, if you went to school to be an anthropologist, that makes complete sense. But take me from that journey of anthropologist to filmmaker and how that influences what you're doing now.
Yeah, well, so the anthropology to filmmaking was actually a little like anthropology studying people.
Yeah.
And filmmaking. Right? I became a documentary filmmaker.
That's
telling the story of people.
Yes.
And I worked a lot. I worked on programs that were mostly for public television that were social historical documentaries. So that like that anthropology, that was a natural segue. Taking that to salad dressing is a little bit
bigger step.
Well, it's less of a natural progression. Mm-hmm. However, like I, you know, when I think about it, it's actually exactly the same practice. Because in a film, you have your raw materials. Like you have what you shoot, audio, interviews, music. You take all of these pieces and you turn them together into the best thing that they can possibly be with so many different disciplines and practices. But it really is like, okay, turn that into something beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you have to then go and sell it, sell that product. And dressing is actually no different. It's the same ingredients, those same raw materials. And if any one of them, like there's a phrase in filmmaking, which is garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
If you don't have good material, you're not going to have a good film. Like just can't, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear or whatever that expression is. Same with the dressing. And that's actually been a little bit of a mantra for me all along, is that like, we're only as good as our ingredients. So we better have good ingredients. And especially when you only have a few, like So we get the best vinegar we can possibly find. Mm-hmm. And we use fresh garlic and we don't like great olive oil, each of these things. Cause if you compromise on any of that, then the final product is going to show those compromises.
Yeah.
So that it's like when I think about it that way, I'm like, okay, it's the exact same thing all over again. You're repackaging raw materials in the very best way you can. And you bring your know-how, you bring the skills you have, the assets you have to bear in order to make it as good as it can be.
Yes. Organizing a mess and turning it into something beautiful.
A little stone soup.
A little. Yes. Yes. I love that. Now, I want to step back for a moment because how I met you, I remember this is just at the most recent Expo West. And I met you. Well, there was a group of women. This woman, Nina Tikazarde. I did not pronounce that last name correctly.
No, it's a tough one because she's Georgian. She's a Georgian from Georgia, from both Georgias.
Oh my goodness. So forgive me, Nina, of Nadi. And I came to meet her to have a brief meeting. And she introduced me to this group of women that were all there together. It was like I was walking into a party in the middle of a bigger party, which was weird. And there's a common thread that you women all meet, I think, almost weekly, and you have a little bit of a mission behind you. Can you just share what that is at a high level? Because I thought it was so special.
Those are my Pepsi girls.
Your Pepsi girls.
Yeah. So summer of 2020, this is one of the greatest programs that exists. Okay. Summer of 2020,
Stacy's Rise
has a program called Stacy's Rise.
Yes.
And what it used to be, I think, was a competition where they would have a competition for 15 and female founders.
Yes.
And Pepsi owns Frito-Lay, which owns Stacy's. So it was really Pepsi that was running the program. Summer of 2020, they decided rather than having a competition, let's just give an award to 15 female founders that pivoted in the midst of COVID and whose companies were threatened. And obviously my company was threatened because we owed so much money on those packets that we had made.
I'm sure of it.
Thousands of dollars and had no market for them. And 14 other women won the same award. And Pepsi is brilliant because they don't just give you cash. Obviously cash is valuable, but when you're talking to entrepreneurs, and especially if you're Pepsi and you have so much innate talent and expertise within your walls, they provided mentorship. Mm-hmm. So each winner was targeted, like, what's your growth area? What's your, where do you need attention? And so each of us was paired with a team of Pepsi execs to help us grow in the area that we needed to grow. Mm-hmm. But then the other thing that I don't think they realized was going to be as valuable as it was, is that they created these peer groups. And so 15 of us, we were split into three different peer groups.
I see.
And my peer group, it's Nadi's from Nadi Juices, or Nina rather from Nadi's Juices. Uh-huh. A woman named Maria Palacio, who has a coffee company called Progeny Coffee. Mm-hmm. Claudia McMullen, who has a coffee company called Hugo's Coffee.
Yes.
And Janita Flowers, and she has a cookie company called Janita's Jar. And the five of us were met and we were told, like, we'd like you guys to talk on a bi-weekly basis while you're going through the program, just so that you can sound ideas off of each other.
Yes.
We got together and we were like a house on fire.
And
so we did not meet every other week. We started meeting every week and we met every week for the 12 weeks of the program. And we've met every week for the 2 years since.
Oh my goodness. Is this the program that Kira is running? Kira Dilley? Yes, I interviewed her a couple of years ago. She is such an amazing human.
Well, so I listened to some of the previous podcasts that you did. And one of the questions I saw was like, who do you admire? And she is who I admire.
Yeah.
What she does for emerging brands and what she does just for kind of women in the food space in general, which
well,
it's kind of, there are a lot of dudes here and they're great. Like, love them.
Yeah.
But it's, for female founders, we'd receive a fraction of the amount of investment. We don't have the same opportunities and networks.
Yeah.
And she has done a lot to elevate female founded brands.
Yes.
And give them opportunities and even just provide a friend. Like sometimes when, I mean, I would, I would call her if, and I'd think she'd pick up the call. Like even
she would. Though she's busy running a company, you know? Yeah.
But so she's, I mean, she's just, she is one of these people who really helps grow both companies and individuals. And I, she has my admiration.
Yes. You have to listen to her episode. She's,
I will. I didn't know you'd interviewed her. I can't wait.
Yes, it's been a couple of years now. But so I guess one of the questions that I have for you kind of coming on the heels of all of this, this love, this kind of this entrepreneurial love and all of this growth is, what do you, what kind of advice do you find yourself giving when people come to you now? You know, you're in your 10th year. What's something common that you find yourself saying, yeah, this is really important for you to know about yourself or about the business or anything?
So it's the same stuff that I sort of tell myself frequently, because often as an entrepreneur, you have to have a lot of dialogue with yourself.
That's the truth.
Sometimes other people aren't willing to listen to you keep talking about that same old thing. But I have, I would say two pieces of advice. I mean, one, the big one is don't give up, because it's so tempting frequently to give up. And I think that we're often, you know, it's not easy. And sometimes the people that, that are still doing it are just the ones that haven't quit. That's probably number one. The other thing that I think is back to the point about the Stacey's ladies is surround yourself with as many people that you can that are either doing the same thing that you're doing or actually have already done it and know better. And this is where, especially within food, we're so fortunate because food people are such, they're such generous people in general. Like I think that you wouldn't be in the business of like, here, eat this, try this, have that, unless you kind of had that generosity of spirit. And you were at Expo, you can feel it at Expo, and people are as kind and as generous with their information as they are with the products that they're sharing. And so I just think like, I don't know. I mean, I meet as many people as you can and just kind of create your own circle.
Yes. Okay. Well, what's next for Dress It Up Dressing or for you? What's on deck this year?
So we got a bunch of, I mean, we're bringing back the packets. That's the big
thing.
Bringing back
the packets.
We put the packets on hold when salad bars remained closed for so long and schools and businesses were all closed. So packets, bringing those packets back into existence is absolutely number one on my list. It's sort of the only thing that's on my list, maybe playing with a couple new flavors and you know, always. But I'd also be curious, like, you know, you talk to so many people that are entrepreneurs and like, where do you like to see people grow and expand? What do you like to see people do?
Oh my gosh. Well, for me, you know, the tables are turned. This was unexpected. So for me, when I, what excites me the most is novel innovation, real novel innovation. So line extension is fun for sure, you know, going from 7 to 14 flavors or whatever. But when I see approaching the needs of the consumer in with a different type of product that is not just yummy, but actually meets a need state. And you know, part of the background of this whole podcast project was I had become really frustrated and disillusioned with what had been happening and what was happening and is still a little bit happening in the naturals category, where a lot of food science came in and we started seeing a blurring of lines between what healthy was, what naturals and better for you was. And with all of this investment capital coming in, a lot of old school leadership was coming into this category and kind of further unbalancing kind of the gender and then also other kind of diversity roles. My biggest thing with the naturals category is we're making products for white upper middle class people that have access to education and healthcare on how to live really healthy lives. And I think we have done a disservice to pretty much everybody else that doesn't look like that by creating products that don't taste good or just don't talk to those people. And then looking at data and going, hey, our data supports the fact that really rich white people are buying our product. Well, I'm like, well, that's who you're targeting. So market opportunity somewhere else. So for me, when I'm starting to see people reach out and kind of go, let's create flavor profiles that aren't super sophisticated, or let's find products that are made with real ingredients and, you know, back to the whole real ingredients and with ingredients, when people read the back of pack, they know what they are and taste good. That's my real passion right now, is to grow natural and better for you eating to the larger audience, knowing that people who aren't rich will still pay more for food if they believe in it and if it tastes good. And then they'll cut back in other areas that are less important for them. And food, and because our health is so important to us, food is the deliver. I'd rather people spend more money on food than on medicine. No disrespect to the medical industry, but why wouldn't you? It's more enjoyable all the way around. So for me, kind of that innovative thinking from a novel standpoint of how are we going to attract this new audience into this really healthy way of eating and not make it feel too highbrow or too complicated or too, you know, add whatever your descriptor is. That's what gets me really excited.
I love that idea. Especially like, I love food as the ultimate preventative medicine.
Yes.
You know, and isn't, like, I think, isn't veganism growing faster among the African American community than any other group? Like, I think I actually feel the same way about dumbing down what people want to eat, you know, like, yeah, give them challenging flavors, like, yeah, give your toddler a challenging flavor,
yes,
and they'll be down with it. Like, they're going to want,
yes,
they're going to want a tater tot too, but like,
yes. But I mean, it has to be exposed to them. And, you know, if you live in an environment where none of that exists, you have to have some wedge, something needs to wedge in there first so that people start going. Nobody 20 years ago would have thought snacking on kale chips would have been a great idea. And yet here we are. Kale, right, is this ginormous part of our diet now, both in snacking and real food, but it required somebody to come in there and normalize it.
And it's, well, yeah. You know, one of the things that I often think about is like, because when I started selling the dressing, we were, yeah, selling it first at the farmer's market.
Yes.
Because paperwork at Whole Foods takes a really long time. So even though Whole, yeah, Foods was our first customer, like first 6 months in between that, we,
yes,
started selling at the farmer's market. And there you get introduced to things you've never seen before.
Yep.
You know, all of the bizarre looking,
yes,
squash and vegetables. And like, I loved this idea that because I like my dressing so much, I could buy anything, yeah, they have there. And I know that I was going to make it taste good.
Yes.
But you have this kind of, like, you're willing to open yourself up to new things,
yep,
and to try new foods if they're, yep, somewhere in there that feels comfortable. Right.
Exactly.
So like, okay, if I know I can put dressed up on it, then like, I know it's going to be good.
Exactly.
If I know I can like melt cheese on it or whatever it is,
yes,
throw it on the grill, like just something so that you're not taking this huge leap and you're not going,
yeah,
you're not going from like, I don't know, from like, you don't have to necessarily go from a glass of water to that mushroom powdered beverage.
Yes.
That I can't think of the name of.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to go all at once,
no,
but like, can't you baby step it there?
You
by
have
just
to baby
a little
step
bit
it
more imaginative.
Absolutely.
And introducing new things one at a time.
And that's when I was talking with Bridget over at Mondelez on the podcast also about a year and a half ago, we talked about the fact that like, let's create the baby step between the Cheeto and the kale chip. There's 1,000 steps in between. Let's get people on that journey so that it doesn't feel like a shock to the system to try something so new. They can experiment and step back and experiment and step back and move forward. And I think that's really, really important. And when you can have a product like yours on the market that is like, this tastes good. Oh, and it's real food. That's a bonus.
Well, that's what like somebody said, you know, what's your innovation? And I'm like, well, it's sort of like the anti-innovation, like salad dressing got innovated out of reality. No. Salad dressing got so innovated that like you could never make it in your own house.
No, how did that happen?
We're going to take 20 steps backwards and go back to, you know, just a couple real things, all of which, you know.
Which is super important right now. I think that is the biggest, movement is, I don't know if it's veganism that is the fastest or where African-American and Black people are the fastest growing part of veganism, but in plant-based, in and of itself, plant-based whole foods, I think the biggest area of growth is in Latina markets, and then and the African-American and Black communities for sure, but particularly in those groups that are closest to immigrating to the United States, they're already close to the concept of whole foods because outside of the U.S., most countries are eat a little bit healthier than we do.
Yeah,
but that's a whole nother podcast, I think.
What we can learn by taking a step back from, you know, but I think you're absolutely right that label reading is
critical.
It's the best thing that people can do, but I also think it is the fastest growing trend in food right now.
Yes. Like, yes, ma'am.
It more than almost anything is that people are just being so much more educated about what they
And they want to understand what they're eating. So the closer we can get to the real, the better.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, you know, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I know that we're going to have a bottle of wine sooner than later. there are a couple of questions I like to ask everybody on the show. You've already answered the first one. I think, you know, are there any women leaders or rising stars in our industry or not that you would simply like to elevate or admire for the work that they're doing right now? I know you mentioned Kira Dilley over there at the Frito-Lay family. Anybody else?
Well, the one person whose story I just love watching, I love watching this woman grow. And she was part of the Pepsi crew as well.
Oh.
But Janita Flowers of Janita's Jar.
Okay.
And she makes a cookie. She's based in Minneapolis. And she had, when she won Stacey's Rise, in part it was because her facility was across the street from where George Floyd was murdered.
Oh.
And so she was right there and
right
found
there,
that at a time when it was hard for her to access her kitchen, everybody wants to buy local. Everybody wants to support local businesses. And what's great about Janita is that through her affiliation with Stacey's, she's now about to launch in Target. She had had exclusively, I think, an online and a direct, like a business
DTC.
She had no retail stores at all in her company. And now she launches in Target in June of this year. And so keep your eyes open for Janita because she's a superstar and her cookies are out of this world.
Wonderful. I'm curious what brands or trends you have your eye on and why?
Well, brands. God, I have to think like I could just look in my fridge and tell you what brands. although not right now. My fridge is pretty bare right now. I'll tell you though, a trend, like I mentioned reading labels, but I think actually the really exciting thing, trend that I see more and more, and I'm so proud to be part of this in a way, in my little way, we're B Corp. We just got certified non-GMO, which is hard.
Big deal.
I wish we were organic. Like, I'd love to have an organic product, but organic olive oil, we're already the most expensive salad dressing on the market. If we're organic olive oil as well, like we're going to be laughable.
First the bank. Yeah.
We got to.
Even manageable.
First, we're teaching people about like, okay, not diluted, 20 servings per container, a lot of real good food in there. Like, you know, you can't get that from a $3 salad dressing.
No.
But I think that the fact that people are asking companies to be more than just a company, that they're asking us to be a B Corp, they're asking us to pay attention to, like, how do you treat your employees? How do you treat the environment? How are you part of the community where you live? Like, We are really being demanding about the products that we choose. I know I am as a consumer, and I love that it, you know, raises me as a business owner to a higher standard.
Yeah.
So that we're paying attention to so much more than we're paying attention to the bottom line, but so much more at the same time. And so I think that's the trend, like, because ideally that just becomes the way of doing business, that it's not, you know, we've had a culture, we've had a especially a consumer culture that was focused on the bottom line exclusively. But I think a world in which companies behave with the same personal responsibilities that individuals have is when we see a really cool marketplace.
Yeah, I love that too. We're, like I said, we're B Corp as well and super fan of the movement. Can't wait till that just becomes table stakes and then it doesn't require a certification. That's just the way it is.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I sort of feel like it was nice to have the certification, but I didn't have to change a thing. Like I would have been doing it anyway.
Right. So. Yeah, get that. Well, we've been talking with Sophia Maroon, CEO of Dress It Up Dressing. Sophia, where can people learn more about you and your company?
At dressitupdressing.com or please visit us on Instagram. That's we're mostly on Instagram. We're still
mostly
new to
despite
the film background, we're still new to that TikTok business.
You'll get there. You'll get there. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm happy to have spent time with you and I look forward to seeing what's next.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to thank all of you listeners for your time today. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Otherwise, have a great rest of your day and we'll catch you next time on The Gooder Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.